I think when a lot of people think about Medicaid, it seems like this really wonky issue, and people might not be familiar with what exactly means and who's covered by it. But this is an issue that stands to impact 15 million people, including 6 million children. So even though it's this conversation right now that has been relegated to this wonky policy space, it stands to have a lot of really important real-world consequences on the everyday lives of Americans.
I'm Annie Reese. This is Politico Dispatch. Today, America's next big health crisis.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks, right, that have struggled throughout this pandemic. I mean, we've seen immense job loss and job shift, you know, and because in the U.S., so much of our healthcare is tied to employment, we've seen, you know, a lot of folks rely on Medicaid during the public health emergency.
Reporter Megan Messerly.
And I'm a healthcare reporter covering state policy for Politico.
On how the Medicaid expansion that's happened during the pandemic might end soon, potentially ending insurance for millions of people. And you wrote a story recently about how when the pandemic ends, 15 million people could lose their Medicaid coverage. Why?
So if people remember way back in March 2020, Congress actually made a change to Medicaid, essentially in exchange for receiving additional money during the pandemic. Congress required states to keep everyone on their Medicaid rolls. That means they can't kick anyone off. So for folks who are familiar with the Medicaid process, what usually happens is, you know, every so often you're redetermined to see if you're still eligible for Medicaid. And there's this kind of churn that a lot of folks talk about where people, you know, come on and off of Medicaid rolls because of income or because they don't fill out their paperwork or other reasons. So essentially Congress said, no more of that. Everyone who is on Medicaid rolls has to stay there until the end of the public health emergency. The public health emergency, as many folks know, keeps being extended in these 90-day increments, was recently extended another 90 days to April 15th. And so as a result, people have just stayed on Medicaid through the duration of the pandemic, actually causing Medicaid rolls to swell to the highest point they've ever been at.
So how many people were on Medicaid before the start of the pandemic and how many are now?
The latest data from CMS shows that enrollment surged nearly 20% over the first 16 months of the pandemic to about 77 million people. So a pretty significant increase, sort of comparable, though hard to sort of square the numbers, but somewhat comparable to the big increases we saw as a result of Medicaid expansion.
Does this mean, are there more people who have health insurance in the United States now than there have ever been?
That's a good question. Yeah. So I was looking at the Oregon Health Authority actually put out something yesterday on this saying that they're at record high enrollment, and they specifically attributed their record high number of people who are covered by health insurance to the fact that, you know, essentially enrollment in Medicaid has been frozen. Again, like I mentioned, there's this typical churn of folks on and off, and sometimes people just fall through the cracks just because they don't fill out the right paperwork. And so a lot of Medicaid advocates are saying, you know, this has actually been a great thing for a lot of the folks who might normally fall through the cracks simply because, you know, they're not aware of the redetermination process and they're sort of not getting the information into their state Medicaid program that they need. And so we have seen this tremendous expansion. Of course, the concern is what happens when the public health emergency ends, right? And all these states have to start these redetermination processes again.
Can you give me a sense of the stakes here?
Yeah. So, and I think this is the biggest thing on everyone's mind, right? We're just talking about, you know, potentially 15 million people, including 6 million children, according to one analysis by the Urban Institute, could potentially lose their Medicaid coverage as a result of this transition. Now, the issue here is making sure that that doesn't happen. I think that's what the federal government and states are focused on for the most part. You know, this is an election year. You know, I don't think the Biden administration wants to see the uninsured rate skyrocket. Mm-hmm. A lot of states are concerned about that as well. It is worth mentioning, though, in a lot of states, there might be political pressure or financial pressure to complete these redeterminations as quickly as possible. So especially in some conservative states, you know, it's not as popular to have as many people on your state Medicaid rolls. And so there's going to be an urgency to clear their Medicaid rolls quickly and remove these people who are no longer eligible for Medicaid. Obviously, I don't think anyone's in disagreement that people who aren't eligible for Medicaid, you know, will eventually need to be removed. But the question is, how fast you complete the process. And what Medicaid advocates have told me is that the faster you go through that process to remove these ineligible people from the rolls, the more likely you are to actually lose people who are eligible for coverage. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to see some of these political dynamics come out as well. And just the financial pressure, it's a cost to states to keep all these people on their rolls. Mm-hmm. And so there is going to be pressure for states to move quickly. And so it's this balance between, you know, being efficient and having states do the work they need to, but not actually losing people who should still be covered under Medicaid.
I feel like this deadline here of removing people who no longer qualify when the pandemic ends is this like very amorphous deadline that keeps shifting. So now that the social safety net has expanded, how easy is it going to be to unwind that?
This is the thing that a lot of state officials are really worried about right now. It's a really difficult process. You're completing redeterminations for millions of individuals. Now, the Biden administration has given states 12 months to complete this process, but it's still a ton of work. I mean, and these are people who, you know, for 2 years haven't been required to fill out this paperwork. And so even for folks who've been on Medicaid for some time, they may just be out of the practice of, you know, keeping an eye out for these notices from their state Medicaid program. So obviously the big concern here is that as states, you know, start to begin this process, which again, sort of the timing is a little unclear, and we can get into that a little bit more. But the big problem here is that it's just a massive amount of work. And the concern is that if you don't make contact with all of these people, you could either one, have people who are still eligible for Medicaid who end up not re-enrolling because they're not aware this is happening, they miss the paperwork, they don't get it in time, and they might lose coverage that way. At the same time, you have people who probably aren't going to be eligible for Medicaid anymore, possibly because of their income level, but state health officials really want to transition to those folks to their state health insurance exchanges. A lot of people whose income makes them ineligible for Medicaid will actually still be available for $0 premiums on their state's health insurance exchange. And so the goal is, now that you have all these people, you've found them, you don't want them to slip through the cracks. You want to make sure that they're connected with the form of health insurance that's right for them, whether that's Medicaid, whether that's an exchange plan, or whether you do determine that they do have some employer-sponsored coverage and they're covered that way.
And what does it mean to qualify for Medicaid? What are the cutoffs?
In states that have expanded Medicaid coverage, if folks remember, this was part of the Affordable Care Act, and not all states have opted into it. But in states that have expanded Medicaid coverage, you qualify based on your income. So if your household income is below 130% of the federal poverty level, you qualify. Now, it's worth noting that's going to be a different number based on the size of your household, because that poverty level is determined based on the size of your household. So for instance, for a family of four, the poverty guideline is a little bit under $28,000. We're talking about folks who make really small amounts of money. Yeah. At the same time, there are a lot of Americans that fall into that category, and this is why this is such a big issue. But one of the problems is that because it is this very strict cutoff, you see a lot of people who, you know, they make just a little bit of extra money this month, and they can be kicked off of Medicaid because their income is just too high for them to qualify. And that's why we often see this churn on and off of state Medicaid rolls, is the fact that, you know, you make a little bit of extra money and you're suddenly no longer for the program, whereas people for the last 2 years, you know, have been held onto this program. So 1 month your income goes up, you stay on Medicaid, it goes back down the next month and you qualify, you're still on Medicaid. And so you're not having to complete this process of applying for Medicaid again and again, you know, every time your income no longer makes you eligible for the program.
Interesting. And so like conceivably, there's a huge number of the population who maybe their income would only increase by $1,000 or $2,000, but they would no longer qualify anymore.
Exactly. And a broader point is, and we've seen this more in blue states, but some states have in place provisions or looking at putting in place provisions that provide for more continuous coverage on Medicaid, right? Some states have looked at this for children. Mm-hmm. So, you know, children will be held on Medicaid for 12 months to sort of have more of this continuity of coverage. But it's a big problem within the Medicaid programs in states generally.
Where do you think things go from here? What are you going to be really watching for?
Yeah, I'm going to be watching for a couple things. One is to see what Congress does. You know, does Congress set a date in which the Medicaid continuous coverage provision will end? Mm-hmm. That's a big one. The other thing that I think states are looking to Congress for is to provide some additional funding while states go through the redetermination process. the way that it works, this extra federal funding that has been granted to states, that ends at the end of the quarter in which the public health emergency ends. And so a lot of states are concerned that because that funding just cuts off on a very hard date, there's going to be more of an incentive for them to go through this process quickly. So they're asking the federal government to give them a little bit of extra funding that perhaps titrates down over time so they could unwind the process over a 12-month period. So that's the big first thing is what Congress does. Then the other one is, what do states do, right? As we look at, especially a lot of blue states, you know, what actions are legislatures taking this year to prepare for this redetermination process? You know, are they allocating extra recovery dollars toward this program like Massachusetts is? As we look at conservative states, are conservative states putting in place legislation that means that their state Medicaid programs will have to go through this process quickly? So there's a lot that can be done on the state side to prepare, but obviously states are also looking to Congress for some additional legislative guidelines, and then CMS as well for some guidance on the technicalities of it.
So I just want to go through a couple of possible outcomes with you. One outcome, it seems like the April deadline happens and 15 million people lose coverage. And another possible outcome is that they come up with a solution and it doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's a good question. So one thing, I know a lot of states are preparing for this continuous coverage provision to end at some point this year. You know, some states have said they're looking at April or May. Some are looking at June. A lot of them, I think, are just trying to be prepared whenever this happens. Mm-hmm. But it's not as if, you know, should Congress set a particular date, it's not as if all these problems will go away, right? Mm-hmm. Just having a date in hand means that states can prepare better, which means hopefully, you know, those 15 million people who are at risk of losing their Medicaid coverage, you know, states can have a plan in place and be prepared with the staff they need and call centers to help get those folks connected with the right form of insurance so they're not going uninsured and so they're not falling through the cracks. So having a date from Congress doesn't necessarily fix all the problems, but states say it certainly would help with these preparations and help mitigate as many of the losses as possible.
Megan Messerly, thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Also today, the protests in Ottawa, Canada, have paralyzed the city and unsettled the country's politics over vaccine and mask mandates. They've also galvanized a movement for people who believe their freedoms are under threat. Now, a nationwide convoy in the United States, starting in California and heading toward Washington, D.C., is expected to get underway March 4th. And broad mask mandates are lifting in many states, including California, Massachusetts, New York, and Illinois, as the Omicron wave wanes and governors have come under intense pressure from Americans who are exhausted by the pandemic. Today's episode of Politico Dispatch included music composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Be sure to follow Politico Dispatch if you haven't yet, and if you can, leave us a rating and review. It helps more people find the show. I'm Annie Reese. Thanks so much for listening.